And so that pretty much launched me in the directions that I took. I think over time I started to see the issues evolve. I realized over time that there were things in my childhood, primarily, that were not the common experience of a lot of kids. And only over time did I start to realize the impact that had on me. And really, it's been a lifelong journey of recognizing and overcoming some of that developmental trauma that I went through. So what we need to be is very intentional about how we train these models to reflect our values. And I think one of the opportunities that AI presents to us is for all of us to be very intentional about what values we want to propagate, not just as people, but into our younger generation. Just like the phone, AI is a new tool. What am I going to do with it? And that, if I may, just really brings back a very important and critical element of this. You got to be able to ask yourself, what am I wanting to create? What is it that I want to happen? Imagine if I had a magic wand, what would I build? What world would I create?
In Youth We Trust sits down with successful entrepreneurs, business leaders, educators, and others from around the world. We spotlight how individuals and organizations are shaping a better world, directly or indirectly, for the coming generations through their focus on sustainability, equity, education, and more to empower young people to create the future they deserve. And now, in Youth We Trust.
Good morning, George. I'm delighted to have you on the show in Youth We Trust.
Good morning. Great to be here. Thank you, Prashant.
George, you have a terrific background. You're at the moment at the forefront of solving problems in AI at Microsoft. As you know, Lumi is a platform where we are giving young people a chance to solve problems of global importance, but also through that build the skills that will actually take humanity forward, not just themselves. So I'll just, if you're okay, I'll take you right at the deep end.
Yeah, let's do it.
So George, because this is about young people, let's go to when you were a young person. Were you at that point in time bothered by any problem or problems that you really wanted to solve? And if so, what was your quest at that time?
Yeah. So when I was young, the biggest problem I had was patience. I wanted to get out into the world and do things. When I was 9 years old, I remember sitting on the sidewalk. I grew up in Las Vegas, and I was sitting on the sidewalk looking up at the moon because Neil Armstrong was landing on the moon that evening or afternoon. And I'm sitting there with binoculars trying to see if I saw something. So that was basically how I thought. I wanted to be out there. I wanted to be out in space. I wanted to be doing all of these great adventures. And I don't know that I knew the problems at the time. I just had unlimited ambition and desire to be out there. I think I realized the problems later on. At the time, it was just I wanted to be out on the edge of adventure. And so that pretty much launched me in the directions that I took. I think over time I started to see the issues evolving.
And what issues did you see?
One issue that is very personal to me, and just to be clear, I'm speaking for myself. This is my own personal opinion and thoughts, not those speaking for Microsoft. I realized over time that there were things in my childhood, primarily, that were not the common experience of a lot of kids. And only over time did I start to realize the impact that had on me. And really, it's been a lifelong journey of recognizing and overcoming some of that developmental trauma that I went through. I remember in college, while I was actually, I had just applied to my graduate program, and I pulled or requested all the applications to be a mission specialist at NASA and was really intent on doing it. But you know, I fell a bit short of that. And but you know, that was okay. That was a very ambitious goal. But the point is that throughout my life, I don't know that I recognized what some of the impact of that childhood was. And it's been, you know, it's been a struggle at times, but it's been a rewarding journey to try to overcome those things and heal from a lot of the issues that I experienced when I was a kid.
And whilst you were experiencing it, I mean, were there issues like personal, which obviously we don't want to get into, but were they driven by the environment that you were in?
Yeah. So it was a whole combination of things. So my family emigrated from Cuba when Castro took over. My dad was in the casino business. We went and moved to Las Vegas, as I mentioned. I grew up in Las Vegas at a time when, you know, the mob was running the city, you know, back in the 60s. And it was a very stressful time. I was just a little kid, you know, watching Neil Armstrong through binoculars. But in fact, there was a lot of stress in my family. And so all of that affected my ability to enter school and think and be calm and be able to absorb the lessons and the material. And the reason I bring that up, it is a bit personal, but the reason I bring it up is because later on, when I was a high school teacher, and I would talk to students and hear the things that they would share about their home experiences and stuff, it really connected for me the importance of being able to present yourself as a student at school in a state of mind that can absorb, that is calm, that is in a state that is open to learning. What I found later on, though, is that people bring a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety to things like math. And so much of my job was to get them to relax, to just enjoy what we're doing and not deal with all the fear that they had about the topic or the anxiety they had about school or whatever that may be. And honestly, it's been that series of experiences, first my own and kind of the struggles that I had going through school, and then watching students and how they respond to whatever the material is based on their home experience. So those are some of the things that formed my my thinking about school and education.
So now, if you look at, you know, your AI is your profession, it's everywhere around mm-hmm. you. Before that, we had social media, which has had a severe impact, you know, on people's mental health, but particularly mm-hmm. the young generation. Do you think that problem is getting worse, or do you think it's getting better with this all these technologies for young
people? I actually think it's getting it's been getting worse for some time. And I hope that there are some things that I'm working on, and I know a number of people are working on to try to get it better. But I think initially the problem has gotten worse. I think social media, what social media does is it just amplifies. Whatever's there, it just turns the volume up to 10. And certainly the research speaks to this, but it seems to reward some of that negativity. So I've seen it in my own kids. I've seen it in some of their friends. You hear about it. You hear about the research. So I think the problem has unfortunately gotten worse. But I do believe that there's some hope.
Of course, there's hope. But I think it depends upon the right actions that we take, and we allow these young people to take, right? So, I mean, you said you have kids.
Sure. I have three kids, 12, 17, and 20.
There you go. Yeah. So right in the middle of the education, yes. Right in the middle of this entire change in you know, that's undergoing in society. So that's very personal because I have an 18 and a 14-year-old. Yeah. So you mentioned briefly you're doing various things, which actually can give us hope. Please tell me a little bit more about, you know, what actions are you taking today to empower the next generation, directly or indirectly?
Yeah,
George.
Well, thank you. So I do believe that there's a lot of opportunity to have a very positive impact. I see my kids and their struggles, and I learn from that. So I think as parents, we have to be smart. But specifically regarding AI, I do believe that there's a tremendous opportunity here. And if I may, let me give you a little bit of background of kind of how what I've learned and how AI then fits into this. So there's a lot of research around things like developmental trauma and everything that talks about how that trauma leaves imprints in your biology. It's not that you necessarily feel things that happened a long time ago, but it actually changes your biology and most specifically your neurochemistry and your electrochemistry in your brain. And there are technologies that are here today. There's nothing even slightly controversial about things like neurofeedback and other technologies like that, that are really being underutilized in terms of dealing with things like developmental trauma. And I think one of the great opportunities of AI is to bring and train AI in ways of working with people to help them overcome some of these scars, if you will, emotional, mental, neurophysiological impacts of the trauma. There are some really beneficial ways of treating that. And AI has, I think, a very valuable and important role to play in that. Just to step back a little bit. So if we think about AI, we right now are in the first minute of the year in terms of AI. And even in just this 1 year since its, you know, big public release, it has evolved dramatically. Things have changed tremendously in the last 12 months. But what is about to come is so much bigger and so much beyond what we might imagine that I think it's gonna be a big adjustment to understand and accommodate these things. But one of the places that AI can have a really, really beneficial effect is, I think, on things like mental health, physical health, partly because what you can do with AI is think of AI as if you think of an LLM model like ChatGPT or some other, think of that as a teenager. And you're launching a teenager into the world to solve a problem, right? And I remember early on, Sam Altman from OpenAI talked about the values alignment problem with AI. And the reason I bring that up is because AI models do behave like they respond like people. And as people, we have values that we reflect in what we say, how we say it, how we interact with people. So what we need to be is very intentional about how we train these models to reflect our values. And I think one of the opportunities that AI presents to us is for all of us to be very intentional about what values we want to propagate, not just as people, but into our younger generation. What are the principles, the values, the ideas, the the strategies, the philosophy that we want to impart into that next generation. And where I find AI is sometimes helpful is that many of those things that we normally think about as ourselves, we tend to not think about deliberately. We reflect who we are, we interact with people, we manifest values, but we don't do it intentionally. And one of the things AI does is it really forces us to think about it because it's a very specific problem. But now we take that and we can now start to think about how do we want to impart in that the healing messages, the thought processes, the consideration needed to be able to help people and help our young people most specifically to engage the world and engage it in a positive and constructive way. So how about if we put an app, an AI model in that device that helps kids calm down when they arrive at school and just take a few minutes to calm themselves, to get themselves focused, to really be able to attend and open themselves to the lesson. I think little things like that, if we do it early, I think can have an enormous impact in kids' trajectories. And yeah, so there's an opportunity there to be intentional about these things.
So that brings me to a different question when I'm hearing this. One of the things that AI is propagating is, or accelerating, is the digital divide. Now, this is all very good when people are in the West or in affluent parts of other parts of the world. But what about those who don't have access to this kind of technology? How is AI helping those? Or can it?
Yeah. Well, I think it can. I certainly recognize what you're saying about the digital divide. I have spent a good bit of time in the Philippines, for example, where we had a number of centers for development and call center services. And while there certainly exists a considerable amount of poverty in some areas, the devices are becoming more and more ubiquitous. I think that has to be addressed, much like the laptop divide has been addressed, where we have developed very inexpensive machines that can be, you know, solar or crank powered or solar powered to be able to go anywhere, even where there is no electricity. There are ways of using it to solve some of these problems. One of the really beautiful things that I find with AI is that it's great at generating ideas, right? At generating options for solving problems. And I believe that one of the areas where we can apply AI is to solving these kinds of problems. Even if you just take a ChatGPT model and go out there and say, hey, let's look at these types of scenarios and ask it, how could you solve these scenarios using your most creative out-of-the-box thinking? It may give you seven or eight ideas. Maybe four of them are a little too crazy, but four of them might be on the edge far enough that you can maybe reach out and achieve it.
Right, right. Now, let me go in a slightly different direction, given your background. So with the, you know, you've been in academic, high school, university. Now you're deep into AI. Do you see the education system, which is school, followed by university, followed by a job, changing? Or do you see some aspects of this collapsing?
This episode is brought to you by Lumi.network. We're on a mission to help the next generation prepare to take on the world. Our AI-augmented platform runs quests that help 10 to 25-year-olds shape their future by developing AI, entrepreneurship, and design thinking skills to solve the most pressing business and social issues. If you or your organization wants to impact the next generation positively, we'd love to talk to you. To learn more, visit lumi.network.
I guess I see some things that are a little frightening, and it seems like some things could collapse. On the other hand, I also believe that, so if we think about it, you could use things like AI to personalize that education, that subject matter to the learner, so that it brings those analogies, it brings those connections. If you extend that idea, then institutions of learning could then be transforming themselves into using technologies like AI to achieve greater levels of personalization with teaching. I do think that the days of having a lecturer and 300 students sitting in the room taking notes and then having an exam at the end, those days, I think, are going to be shorter and shorter. And days of personalization of education are going to be increasingly the norm as we go forward.
Yeah. But as technology becomes so accessible and you can do so much, I mean, just with Sora, you can do so much that you could take weeks to produce.
Yep.
So do you think similarly technology will enable 14, 16-year-old to go straight into a job that is today, something that only a university graduate can go for?
Well, perhaps, and here's the issue. There is technical knowledge, and certainly for a lot of jobs, you have to have a certain technical understanding of how to do something. But there's also judgment that is needed and wisdom that is needed for doing our jobs. And obviously, it depends on what job you're doing. But certainly, if the technical knowledge is all that's needed, perhaps a 14-year-old can do the job just fine. And as we see, we have lots of teenage entrepreneurs that build companies, build devices, build all sorts of really interesting things. But I think there's lots of examples of people that have been very successful, yet lack the wisdom to know what to do with that success at times. And I think that brings us back to the whole question of what are our values.
So yeah. Therefore, I've got an AI supporting me. What I'm trying to see here is how realistic is the change in the education system that we see or we have seen for nearly 250 years.
I think it is very realistic. The timing may not be one that we understand, but the logic of it, I think, is inescapable. The question is, do we have the infrastructure? Do we have the rails, the safety rails in place to make those things happen? I think it's going to take a while to get there. But does it make sense to leverage that horsepower wherever it appears? So much of your success in life is often determined by what zip code you were born in or, yeah, you know, where you attended preschool or whatever. And you may have wonderful capabilities that just don't get tapped. So extending that network, that infrastructure out to those people to be able to contribute would make us all a better, make the world a better place to be, better. I believe.
Yeah. So as a senior professional, when you're hiring, do you see a change in what you're looking for in people? What has changed in what you look for in people?
So it has changed for me. Early in my career, I looked for very kind of specific markers and indicators of education, career experience, etc. What has been demonstrated by this surge of AI is how rapidly knowledge and technology change. And so success is really defined by your ability to adapt to that change, as opposed to hoping that someone brings that experience already. For so many years, it was all about, you know, hiring was all about where you had been, what companies, who you knew, et cetera. But with the speed of change, the rapidity of evolution of technology, and frankly, every structure and infrastructure that we work in, I think the ability to adapt, what we call growth mindset here at Microsoft, that is really critical for people, I believe, to continue to be successful and be able to then figure out how to take this new tool, because just like the phone, AI is a new tool. What am I going to do with it? And that, if I may, just really brings back a very important and critical element of this. You got to be able to ask yourself, what am I wanting to create? What is it that I want to happen? Imagine if I had a magic wand, what would I build? What world would I create? And I think all too often people don't ask themselves that question. They just kind of go to the next thing or the next thing that helps them succeed or whatever. And those things are all good. But I think it's important that we challenge ourselves and ask what we want to achieve. And I think that's another element that, as I've gotten older, I've started to look for more and more for in applicants and in candidates, is do they have a vision for what they want? Do they have an idea of what they are trying to achieve ultimately? And that, I think, is really important.
So we are running out of time. So therefore, let me take you a little bit into the future. And, you know, I keep putting you on the spot. And the question I have for you is, many a times when I am engaging with incumbents in education or industry, or indeed parents, you know, their response sometimes is, you know, we've seen this all before. You're talking about AI. Some people are ringing an alarm bell. Other people are saying this is good for us, this and that. Didn't we all see that when we had the internet come along? What you, as a practitioner, what do you think? You know, how disruptive is this technology compared to the advent of the internet?
Yeah. Well, it's certainly, it would be great to have the precise magic ball to be able to predict that. I believe that it is going to be very disruptive. What I can't guarantee is the time frame, right? It's like, you know, how quickly it gets adopted or how slowly. It's hard to tell. That will be up to the way people react, governments, you know, if there are notable cases of good things or bad things, all of that will play a hand in timing. But the change is absolutely going to be there. And I think like the internet, like phones, any of these things can be used for the benefit of humanity or for the benefit of only the user or the creator of the technology. And I think that question should be asked early and often. What am I doing? What impact am I leaving behind? Am I helping other people? And if that is your mindset, then there is no question that these powerful tools like the internet, phones, AI can have a miraculous impact. On the other hand, if we leave it strictly to how am I going to make money for myself? Well, then that's what we're going to get. So it always comes down to the values people bring.
The values I can understand. But what I'm noticing is that there's almost a denial. I see the same issue with climate change. And the denial aspect is, we've seen this, or this isn't going to have, you know, people are saying this is going to change the future of jobs, the future of humanity, this and that. But it won't. It's okay. We've come through lots of other changes. Hello? We'll get through this one too. So it's the denial aspect. And, you know, I sometimes kind of, you know, want to say, you don't understand. But then the very moment I feel like saying that, I stop myself and say, maybe I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm constantly trying to educate myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so there, you know, I think as humans, we are generally resistant to change because change challenges us. Change forces us. I don't know if you've ever read Daniel Kahneman, Think Fast, Think Slow, and all of the thoughts about cognitive processing and everything, but change forces us to step into that second gear that really requires effort. And it's just a bias that we have to try to resist that. And to the best we can, very much like being a lifelong learner is embracing change and adapting and then figuring out how to apply your values to this new technology. So these new technologies, you know, they're gonna have a big impact. We might have had the same reaction when Facebook first got created. I don't know, but the fact is there's no way they don't have an impact, a sizable impact, given the effectiveness that they bring to so many different types of problems.
Yeah, of course. So where do you see the world by 2040?
Well, I think one of the big shifts that's going to be happening is that so many of the things that we engage with are going to be represented to us in this type of AI interaction. So many of our jobs are going to become things that look much more like prompt engineering. But I really, again, I keep harping on this theme, but if you want to build a really effective prompt, you have to be really precise about your question, right? That forces a level of detailed thinking that often we ignore or discard. And I think that challenge of thinking very precisely about what we want and how we want to achieve it is going to be a healthy thing for people. I think that will prepare everyone very well for the way AI will change the world, because that is how AI works. It asks you to define what needs to be done, so you need to be very precise about it. Many of the things that we deal with are, I think, going to be automated. We, as workers, for example, we will continue to elevate in terms of our strategic position in decision making. And a lot of the work will be done by automation and machines. But AI doesn't have a will, doesn't have an intention. It only responds. And so it's still going to require people to tell it what to do.
Brilliant. Thank you. Well, I really enjoyed talking to you, George. I think wide-ranging answers, from being philosophical to being very pragmatic. And as I expected, there is no clear answer. And how can there be? You know, we are all kind of racing the car as we are building it.
Yeah, that's right.
Quite literally. So thank you again. And, you know, I look forward to continuing this dialogue and to coming back and seeing, you know, how things are evolving.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Yeah, it'd be great to see, take a check in a few years and see how things are evolving. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, probably in a few months.
That's true. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for listening. If you found this conversation valuable, please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you have a story or someone you know does, please recommend them to us by email at hello@lumi.network. We'll see you next time on In Youth We Trust.